Welcome to the Not Old Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelzang, and this is episode number 238. As part of our Smithsonian Associates Art of Living interview series, our guest today on the Not Old Better Show is Matthew Jakubowski. Matthew Jakubowski is the Senior Curator of Fashion and Material Culture at the Brooklyn Museum, the site of the last stop on the world tour of the David Bowie Is exhibition. The David Bowie exhibition has been getting rave reviews, and the Brooklyn Museum, under the direction of Matthew Jakubowski, was designed specifically for the exhibition, which added over 100 new works. Matthew and I discuss the details of the exhibition, how it was adapted for the Brooklyn Museum's unique gallery spaces and audience, and how the content and design of the exhibition merged to create an immersive visitor experience featuring the art, fashion, and remarkable career of David Bowie.
The Brooklyn Museum presentation of David Bowie is the end of a five-year tour, and this is the final stop for the show. And I'm really looking forward to coming to the Smithsonian to talk about its evolution and how David Bowie was one of the greatest visualizers of rock music in the 20th century.
That, of course, is our guest today, Matthew Jakubowski, who will be appearing at the Smithsonian Associates Program July 20th, 2018, at the Ripley Center in Washington, D.C. Please check out our website for more details, but please join me in welcoming to the Not Old Better Show via internet phone, Matthew Jakubowski. Matthew Jakubowski, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
You know, I have to tell you, I'm so excited to talk to you. I mean, I'm a fan, of course. This is a very talented man in David Bowie, but tell us a little bit about your, tell us briefly about your upcoming presentation at the Smithsonian Associates.
Well, the exhibition David Bowie Is started in London in 2013 and toured for 5 years. So we wanted it really to end in Brooklyn the same way that his life kind of did. You know, David Bowie was born in London, and then he spent the last 20 years of his life in New York. But of course, in New York, you always want to do everything, you know, a little bit bigger and a little bit more. So I went in and kind of reworked the exhibition. And in the course of doing that, I added 100 extra pieces to the show. So my talk at the Smithsonian is going to talk about a little bit about how you take an exhibition that's on tour and how you remake it to kind of fit the audience that you're expecting to come to see it.
Well, I don't want to give anything away. I want to make sure and get audience there for you. And so I'm curious, though, what made the New York exhibition slightly different? Just give us a couple things that you added that you're going to talk about, kind of some interpretations that you took. You mentioned Bowie's life there in New York, and maybe a couple of those stories would be great to hear from you, Matthew Jakubowski.
Yeah. Well, you know, the show was done in London, and it really had a British perspective on the show. And David actually worked a lot in America, so I really wanted to spend a moment and kind of bring out those American moments in his career in a much bigger way. So, for example, when you enter the exhibit in Brooklyn, it's very different from the other venues in that the first time I went to the archive, I was walking down an aisle, and there was a crate, and it had a Polaroid on it of a W, and I looked at it and recognized it as one of the letters from one of his tours. He had done something called the New York City Marathon Tour in 2002, where he went to a different venue each night of the week, a different borough. But the consistent thing was that he had these Bowie letters hanging on the stage. So I saw the W, and I asked them if they had the other four letters, and they did. And so we had an electrician and a conservator work on them for about 2.5 months, and we were able to get them working again, and we were able to program them to move and turn on and off just like they did on stage in 2002. So that's a big one. You know, I then also emphasize his work in Philadelphia, because he made the Young Americans album in Philadelphia, which contains his first hit song, Fame. I had the backdrop for The Elephant Man restored. It hadn't been seen since 1980 when he was on Broadway. And that's a special moment in the exhibit. So a lot of cool things.
Sounds like it. This was such a colorful man. The song Golden Years, of course, comes to mind as we talk about this colorful man with a colorful career. What did you learn about Boy that underscored, you know, this man as kind of an artist's artist? I read in my research that, you know, this was an artist who underwent a mutation throughout his career. So tell us a little bit about what you learned about him.
Yeah, you know, he had very interesting parents to start with. His mom was an usherette in a movie theater, and his father had a series of nightclubs, and then eventually went to work for an organization called Dr. Bernardo's Home for Children, and spent 35 years there doing fundraising for them. So a big part of it was putting on shows to raise money. So David learned a lot about stagecraft from his father putting on the shows. He learned a lot about movies by his mom, you know, getting him into the movies. And he also had a half-brother named Terry, who was very much interested in jazz music and beat poetry. So throughout the whole career, you don't expect it because you think it's all going to be rock and roll, but it's a lot of the references are about jazz. The first instrument that he learns is a saxophone, and then the last album he makes, Black Star, he actually went out to a little club near where he was living in Manhattan and found these jazz musicians, and he invited them to come and work with him in the studio. So the last album is heavily jazz-influenced. So the combination of jazz, film, nightclub, he had a lot of early history that influenced his whole career. So you can't underestimate how important those growing up years are.
Fascinating person, absolutely. What was it about him that made him such a kind of a must-have, for you and the Brooklyn Museum? And has the museum done other rock legends about their careers?
We did a show in 2009 called Who Shot Rock and Roll, which was a retrospective of rock and roll photography. And we had such an amazing response to it. Over 100,000 people came to see Who Shot Rock. And it was kind of our first foray into that arena. You know, previously we'd spent a lot of time working on hip-hop. We did a show called Hip Hop Nation. We have done two major Basquiat exhibitions. And looking at art from hip-hop point of view, especially being in Brooklyn. But rock and roll, you know, it kind of comes into the conversation. And Bowie got to be talked about a lot here because, you know, he's probably one of the greatest visualizers of rock and roll music. When you come to the show, you see that when he was writing lyrics for a song, he would often be doodling in the margins. And he was already thinking about what that song looked like. He also, it went the other way too. He often wrote lyrics based on an image. So for example, his song Space Oddity was based on the first photograph ever taken of Earth, which was in December 1968. And he wrote the line, "Planet Earth is blue and there's nothing I can do," based on that photograph. Hmm. And then in 1969, when the astronauts actually walked on the moon in England, they played David's song over that footage, and that became his first hit. So lots of visualizations of music, and that's why we were interested in bringing him to the Brooklyn Museum.
I love those little anecdotes about these individuals. And so we are with Matthew Jakubowski. Matthew Jakubowski will be speaking at the Smithsonian Associates program. The title is David Bowie Is. That's the title of the exhibit at the Brooklyn Museum. And the presentation will be Friday, July 20th, 2018 at 6:45 at the Ripley Center. I know you are super busy right now, Matthew Jakubowski. So I just have a couple of questions. You make this reference to New York, and that's where he lived that's where Bowie lived for quite some time. So what was the connection to Andy Warhol and the kind of the New York scene, and why was all of that so important to Bowie?
He wrote a song called Andy Warhol in the late 60s, just based on knowing about him. And in the summer of 1971, Andy Warhol had a play called Pork that was performed in London. And David went to see it multiple times. So when he signed with RCA Records, on his first trip to New York City, he went and he met Andy at the studio. He met Iggy Pop. He met Lou Reed. All these people that he'd like listened to and read about and were kind of heroes for him. And he then had really long relationships with Iggy Pop. And then he produced Lou Reed's song Walk on the Wild Side, and then went on later to write two albums for Iggy Pop, The Idiot and Lust for Life.
Oh, yeah, sure. Of course.
He didn't have quite as good relationship with Andy. They went to the studio, and we have a video of it in the exhibition. And David played his song Andy Warhol for Andy, and he didn't really like it that much. So that was the only time they met. And then David played him in the film Basquiat that Julian Schnabel directed. But he kind of nailed it, you know. So so I think that, you know, David, I think, really liked that there was kind of this rawness and newness and experimentalism about these people in New York, which was something that he didn't see at that moment in England. England doesn't really get to that punk kind of moment till the mid-70s, and Iggy Pop had already been to that territory.
The man Bowie is such an iconic talent, but he's also known for, as you say, you know, this showman aspect of his career, writing songs for Iggy Pop like Lust for Life, which is a classic, a wonderful song, a very popular song. But tell us a little bit about Bowie's fashion efforts, because I thought that was a fascinating, that seems to be a fascinating part of the exhibit. And then maybe leave us with one final story about any other aspect of Bowie that the museum guests have really particularly enjoyed. I'd love to hear that too, Matthew.
Okay. You know, fashion was really important for him, you know, right on at the beginning. When he was a teenager, he was in a series of like 10 little bands. You know, he would be in them for a couple months or a little bit longer. And he was always already designing what the logo was going to look like and, you know, what their outfits should be. And when he finally went solo, he was very much interested in orchestrating the full appearance of his character on stage. So he went through different phases. You know, he was very much interested in Clockwork Orange at one point, so he was doing these very minimalist outfits, and then later he became interested in Kabuki theater, and he worked with Kansai Yamamoto from Japan, who was very familiar with Kabuki theater, and what he liked about it was that in that type of theater, they were able to do quick changes on stage. So if you go back and look at some of the performances of David from the early 70s, he often does these moments where they rip off the costume and he has a bodysuit or something underneath it. And that type of like surprise presentation was very important for him. The surprise story I'll tell you to end with is that when he was a teenager in the early 60s, he went to see a performance of Little Richard, and Little Richard was doing a performance where he was dying on stage, and someone would come and put the cape on him, and then he would come back to life. which we know of, you know, James Brown did that kind of performance. Elvis later did some of that performance, but Little Richard was doing it early. And David was watching that from the audience and was shocked because he actually thought something wrong was happening on stage. But when Little Richard came back to life, his friend said that David was just astonished. And the next day, he went out and bought a photograph of Little Richard. And that photograph, the story is that whatever recording studio he went to, the first thing he always did was hang up his picture of Little Richard. And we have that in the exhibit.
Well, Matthew Jakubowski, thank you so much for joining us today. You really have a fascinating job. I know your presentation upcoming at Smithsonian Associates on Friday, July 20th. It's going to be Friday night, a perfect night to hear this presentation from you. We're excited to see you, meet you, and hear what you have to say more about David Bowie. But thanks so much for your time today. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. Thank you very much.
My thanks to our guest today. And please check out our website at notold-better.com for more information and conversation. And thanks to all of you, my wonderful audience, for your charming, encouraging, and advice-driven emails with show and topic suggestions. Please keep them coming at info@notold-better.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at notoldbetter. And you can find us on Facebook as well. We are Not Old Better there on Facebook. Podcasts of the Not Old Better Show are available on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Also on Amazon's Alexa. How are you today, Alexa?
I'm doing great.
Alexa, play the Not Old Better podcast.
Getting the latest episode of the Not Old Better Show. Here it is from TuneIn.
You can always find us online at notold-better.com, where you can find all of our archives. You can share a link, you can get in touch, and I look forward to hearing from you. I'm Paul Vogelzang, and please, everyone, let's talk about better. The Not Old Better Show. Thanks, everybody.